Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschachade Satarane Om Manganam Timarandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So I'm offering my obeisances unto my spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. So kindly open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was standing in the midst of darkest ignorance. Can everyone hear me okay? There's two fans going, and I got a cold while I was in Europe, a Euro cold, and my ears haven't popped from the airplane, so I can't hear myself very well, or I can hear it inside. So I can't tell how loud my voice is. I have no idea.
Sorry, this went too hot. This one off?
Well, we'll have to. You can move up too, you know. It might be hard anyway. Okay, well, that sounds better anyway. Okay. So I'm reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, the second chapter, text number 44. Bhogaishvarya prasaktanam taya prittachitasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samado na vidyate. Krishna says, in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. The purport by Srila Prabhupada. Samadhi means fixed mind. Actually, in the Sanskrit, samado na vidyate. The vyavasa atmika buddhi, the resolute intelligence, samado, in the fixed mind, does not take place. So this word samadhi, he says, means fixed trance. The Vedic dictionary, the Nirukti, says, samyag adiyate smin atmatattva yatatmyam. When the mind is fixed for understanding the self, it is said to be in samadhi. Samadhi is never possible for persons interested in material sense enjoyment, nor for those who are bewildered by such temporary things. They are more or less condemned by the process of material energy. So here Krishna is laying down the conditions for spiritual life. In this this chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is setting forth two ways of going, or two paths. One is the path of sense gratification, and the other is the path of self-realization. And is trying to explain to Arjuna that his business as a human being is self-realization. And that this self-realization, real self-realization, is the opposite of sense gratification. Finally, a little later on, he has this verse, the day and night verse. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-controlled. That is the person who's on the path of self-realization. So what is night for everybody else is daytime for that person. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage. So there's two ways of going, and they're like day and night. And you may be living in the same geographical area, But these two people, those who are they're directed, their motives, their desires, their energy, their attention towards sense gratification, and those whose attention and so on is towards self-realization, they live in two different worlds. And one world, the world of sense gratification, is really the illusory world. And those who are engaged in the path of self-realization, that's the real world. So people are thinking, those who are engaged in sense gratification, this is reality. But they don't know, it's actually unreality. So he wants to say that these are two opposite things. So he's laying down the condition for those people who really want transcendence. This Krishna conscious society is a society of transcendentalists, meaning those people who want to become free from bondage to material nature. Bondage to material nature means bondage to repeated birth, death, disease, and old age. That's the real business of being a human being, is to become free from those things. Because we can do it. First of all, we have to be convinced that it's doable, and that there is such a thing, and that if there is such a thing, that actually we can attain it. And that's what this Bhagavad Gita is about, is explaining to Arjuna, there is such a thing, there's a state of freedom from a material life that is possible for human beings, and he's telling Arjuna that you can do it. You can attain that state, and I'm going to tell you how. And in the process, I'm going to remove all your misgivings or your doubts, either that such a state is not there, or that if it is there, that I can do it. We need to be convinced like that, because it requires what this verse is about, vyavasa atmika buddhi, resolute determination. So if you want to get anything in this world, it requires resolute determination. These people that win the gold medal at the Olympics, they do so because they've got some resolute determination. They become a little single-minded. They want one thing. They want to win. And so they do this. They sacrifice everything. They don't go to parties. They practice, 12 hours a day, skating or skiing or whatever it may be. And then they win something. Well, they win a prize. They got a gold medal. It's about this big. You sacrificed, 20 years of your life, and this is what you get. Plus the opportunity to endorse some products and appear on television, and maybe some money which you spend. Then when you're 40 years old, all you got to say is, so you sit in a bar and you say, 20 years ago I was somebody. The trouble is, even to get anything in this material world worthwhile, that people value, requires resolute determination. I mean, everyone thinks they're going to win a lottery. I mean, a lot of people think they're going to win a lottery, but that, basically, there's, every time the lottery goes, there's one winner and 2 or 3 million losers. So most people know that to get anything in this world, you have to have resolute determination. And they both postpone their enjoyment until later. They go to college and get a degree, so that they can earn more later. So people had developed this single-minded purpose. They want to do anything. And, if you don't have it, then your parents tell you, everybody tells you, you're going to fail in life. You got to do something. You got to make something of yourself. You got to get out of bed. At least you have to go to work every morning. You have to have this single... A lot of people don't want to do it. Now, there's two reasons people don't want to do it. One reason is we're just apathetic. We don't care enough. And those are the people who end up living on one end of a needle or something like that. Have no meaning for life. And they just can't get it together, even for to be you know, resolutely determined enough to get some sense gratification. There's another group of people who are discouraged by the fact that you have to work so hard for something that's temporary. Just like the people that sacrifice and everything for their 20 minutes of fame, their moment of glory, and then they're a memory. They're a, you know, a trivia question for future generations. There are some pictures in a fading scrapbook, and that's all. The trouble in the material world is whatever we try to get on the material platform that we have to sacrifice for, whatever we get is temporary, and it comes to an end. So people are trying to achieve different things, and almost everybody is sacrificing to achieve something else. Somebody will go and just to hold down a regular job, you're sacrificing. You're spending 8 hours a day basically doing something you don't want to do. It's called work because you don't want to do it. What are people sacrificing for? Well, a lot of times they're sacrificing because they have a family and they're sacrificing for their family. Or they're sacrificing just so the 1 week out of the year I can go somewhere and have a vacation. Or they're putting money in a savings account so that, you know, I can retire. Whatever, they've got some plan. Or they go to college and they sacrifice so that later on they'll be able to make even more money. Or they want fame or something like that. But whatever they achieve, it's material. And material means it's temporary. And the discouraging fact is you have to work so hard even for something in this material world, and then it's wiped out sooner or later. And so you spend your whole life sacrificing, and the time of death has come, and all you've got to show for it is some memories. And maybe you don't even have that. Maybe you've got Alzheimer's diseases and there's not even memories left. You've got nothing to show for it. Your whole life is gone. And maybe at one time some people said some nice things about you. And somebody gave you a little a medallion or a gold cup or something like that. So you got a wall full of bowling trophies or something. And you say, see, I'm important. My life has meaning. See, I got this wall full of golden bowling trophies. See, we won the championship in Des Moines, Iowa, 1969. So you that's trivial. So somebody else, you see this? This is an Academy Award. There's no difference. The difference between the 1969 Des Moines, Iowa bowling trophy winning and the Academy Award is this much. Or the Nobel Prize, it's this much. Because in 100 years, who's going to know anything about anybody? Say you work really hard and get really famous and do something really big. What do you achieve? You're a name that some begrudging schoolboy has to remember long enough to pass an exam. That's what you get. It's not worth it. So people are doing all this stuff, you know, for fame or for posterity or something like that. Or just for right now, I just want to enjoy now. Sure, a few cheap thrills and then it's all over. Now people live like that because they may think there's nothing more. But if you think about it, if you think about what the situation is in the material world, you'll actually go crazy. You won't be able to stand it. That here we are in a place with a death rate of 100%, where everybody's dying. It's a concentration camp. Nobody gets out alive. Or we're being slaughtered at a regular rate. Every day, you know, people are being hauled off and killed and buried, and the next day more are being wiped out, and the next day more are being wiped out. This vast mortality is going on around us. We say, it's a nice day, isn't it, huh? Let's go get something to eat. You know, we don't know when we're going to be called. Actually, it's like as though there's some invisible person walking around with a loaded 45 to our head, and in any minute, I don't know when he's going to pull the trigger. He's there, and at any time, you know, I don't know when. If you're actually conscious of that guy there, you know, you can't eat your ice cream. You won't have any saliva in your mouth. So we pretend it's nice. So people are leading lives in which they don't allow them to think about the reality of the situation in the material world. So therefore, there's a systematic cultivation of illusion. People have to make themselves unconscious. That's what they're busy doing, becoming unconscious, staying unconscious, remaining unconscious, so that they don't have to think. The trouble is with the material world is that everything is temporary. The trouble is there's birth, and that's followed by death, and in between there's disease and old age, and nobody can deal with these problems. They can't be solved on the material platform. So we have to point this out to people. And actually, you are a candidate for becoming a transcendentalist when you actually can understand this. And understand that there's an alternative. There are some people who understand this. They have a brutally clear vision of what reality is like. And they simply fall into despair. And they become suicidal. Sometimes they commit fast suicide, and sometimes they commit slow suicide by taking to intoxicants or something like that, something to kill their consciousness because they simply can't stand the way things are. Nobody can stand them. But those who know that there's an alternative, we can look at the material world in a clear way. Krishna says the material universe is dukkalayam and shashvatam. It is temporary and it is miserable. See, they're really all you get in the material world is a few little zaps of pleasure. Zap, zap, zap. And then that's it, really. The biggest thing that people are into, that they spend all their lives going for, and that their whole consciousness is wrapped around, is sexual pleasure. Everything is done for sex, and how long does it last? You know, 7 seconds? The most intense pleasure you can get, and it's so heartbreakingly brief. And people keep going for it. And then after a while, you know, it doesn't satisfy, and you got to do weirder and weirder things to get off on it. Actually, any material pleasure, if you just keep doing it, you grow tired of it. You grow sick of it. Even if you keep it up, you grow sick of it. So that's the nature of the material world. So the verdict is that there's no happiness in the material world. There's no real happiness. Not what any of us want. What we want is some state of joy or bliss or happiness that keeps on going without any end or any interruption and keeps getting better all the time. That's what people are looking for. You can see it at like just the simple test that anybody can do. That somehow or other we manage to bring our senses into contact with the sense objects, and we feel pleasure. And we kind of wrap our consciousness around that feeling of pleasure and cuddle up to it and take possession of it and say, now I'm enjoying. Right? Then the pleasure comes to an end, as it always does. Right? Either the neurons get fatigued and the feelings start coming, or there's a separation between the senses and the objects. How do we feel? We feel... well, that let down, upset, disappointed, bereaved, bereft. And how do we act? Well, we try to again bring our senses into contact with pleasure. So if you ask ourselves, why do we feel that way when our pleasure comes to an end? Well, because I want it to keep on going. And then if you ask anybody, well, how long do you want it to keep on going? You say, well, how long can I have? Forever? So you can just see why do we want some kind of happiness that goes on without any end? The reason is, actually, the real reason is that we are spiritual beings. And as spiritual beings, our endowment is unending ananda, or bliss. We're looking for it. Unfortunately, we're looking for it in a place. We are looking for, as you can see, we're all looking for unending happiness in a place where all pleasure is temporary. You won't find it. It's not there. We're always going to be disappointed. It's always going to come to an end. We establish various relationships. In those relationships, we get various sorts of happiness. All those relationships come to an end. Ultimately, there's death, which is the ultimate failure to perpetuate relationships. It all comes to an end. That means that even while we are enjoying, we are nervous. Because we know that it's going to come to an end. We know that there are so many different things that can happen to disturb this relationship out of which I am gaining some kind of happiness. It's a jury-rigged, rickety situation, and there's 100 things that can go wrong to disturb this. So as soon as I even have something, I'm nervous, I'm in anxiety. And in fact, the more I have, the more nervous I am. And in fact, in order to maintain this pleasure, I have to spend so much time protecting it that I don't even have time to enjoy it anymore. There's the guy, all he wants is a nice house, nice wife, nice kids. Right? And so he's working an 80-hour week to get all that. He's never home. He never even, once in a while, he stops by. What's his happiness? Well, he can say to himself, I have a nice wife. I have a nice house. I have some, that's all. A little mental pleasure. Otherwise, it's all anxiety. So there is no carefree happiness in this material world. It's all full of care. It's all full of anxiety, and it all comes to an end. So this is depressing news. But it's a fact. Everybody's embarked on various sorts of careers to gain happiness in the material world, and we have to say, forget it. It won't work at the outset. And then you think, well, what am I supposed to do? Just become a junkie? What am I supposed to do? Why tell me all this bad, depressing news? Maybe we should preserve our illusions if they're all that we've got. Let's just keep us, maintain our illusions. But it's not all that we have. Because there's a price that we're paying for this temporary pleasure. Because here we are engaged in this sense gratification, which is only going to make us miserable. And yet we're clinging to it with all these false hopes. Yet that very sense gratification is the cause of our suffering. That's why here the alternative is self-realization. They're opposite with each other. So when people meet, people like this Krishna conscious movement, there's people who are on the path of self-realization. I'm not saying we're the only group or the only people who are engaged in this. But I can tell you a lot of people who are, say, they're into spiritual life or some kind of spiritual path, if you actually look at their behavior, they are not. And actually, they're cheaters. Because they'll say to you, we're going to give you some kind of spiritual realization, we're going to give you some kind of God, knowledge of God, oneness with the universe, or however they define moksha or satori or something like that, some kind of, you know, transcendental ecstasy. But you don't have to regulate or give up sense gratification. They're lying, they're cheating. So here, he's saying here in this verse, in the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, Sanskrit words are bhoga and aishvarya. Enjoying material things and aishvarya means opulence, being like a king, having this, having that. You can be a real king, or, you know, as they say, every man's home is his castle. Whatever you got to lord it over. Bhoga and Aishvarya. And who are bewildered by such things. The resolute determination to engage in devotional service, or for that matter, any path of self-realization, doesn't take place. They'll always be distracted from what it takes, what it takes. So there, the two paths are there. This one, the path of sense gratification; the other of self-realization. The problem is, when we say self-realization, it means that we have to uncover, or discover, or recover the real self, what I really am. Right now, we are hidden to ourselves because we've accepted a false identity. And that false identity is the temporary material body and mind, the conditioned self, the self that is a product of material nature. It's really not ourself, but we've put it on like a suit. Like you know, the Felix fanatic zips himself up in his costume. You know, we've all got our costumes that we're zipped up in. And it would be nice if there were a zipper and we could just step outside. You know, the word ecstasy, it means ecstasis. It means to step outside. And it's called ecstasy. You step outside. Not yourself, but your false self. Because there's a real self struggling to get out. But we don't know how, we don't know the way. So that way, that path, is the path of spiritual realization that's given by Krishna here, devotional service. He mentions other paths of self-realization. But Arjuna protests, it's too hard. So Krishna finally says, this is what will work, this devotional service. That you can do. So what we have to do is engage in the activities of the soul. For the revival of our original consciousness, we have to end our false identification of the self with the material body, which really means we have to change our whole relationship with the world, with our own bodies, with other people, and with the source of everything. Right now we're living in an unreal world because we are engaged in a systematic misperception. So we have to change that unreality into reality. That's what Krishna consciousness is about. Our problem is, the first thing is, we've identified ourselves with the material body. We're an eternal, this is like a guide for our, there's a map that Krishna draws. It says, this is what the world is like. We can't see what it's like now because we're in ignorance. So Krishna, who's not in ignorance, who's not a conditioned soul, gives us a little map. And part of that map says, here is the real self. This is you. You are the spirit soul. And you are not the body. We are a spiritual being that has come into material nature. This is matter. It's dead, lifeless, and inert. Our bodies are composed of matter. Actually, our minds are also composed of subtle matter. And this body, this gross and subtle body, that's our costume. That's really not the self. The self is the soul. And the track, the footsteps, the footprints of the soul that is visible for us is consciousness. The presence of the soul leaves evidence in the form of consciousness. This right here is a material object taking up space. This is a material object taking up space. There's a me in this object taking up space. Somehow or other, there's a pair of eyes which are little machines that just like a video recorder. My eyes are just like little machines that record visual impressions, forms. And my ears are just like a tape recorder. This body is an assembly. It's an intricate machine made of material nature. But there, I'm behind this machine, looking out through these eyes, conscious of what my eyes are seeing, conscious of what my ears are hearing. There's a tape recorder going here somewhere, right? Nobody's home in that tape recorder. Nobody's hearing inside. You're all hearing. I'm hearing. Tape recorder's not hearing. But all our body is in an assembly of machinery like that. Just a little better done. Furnished with instruments or machinery for picking up audio impressions and visual impressions and so on. Other kinds of sensation. Pressure, heat, cold, so on. All this stuff can be duplicated by machinery, robots. But there's somebody at home in this machinery, and that's us, that's the soul. Otherwise, this thing is taking up three-dimensional space, there's nobody at home, right? It's just an object without any subject. So we have to understand that we are not these bodies. That's the first lesson that Krishna gives in this Bhagavad Gita. And all our problems stem from the fact that we have identified ourselves with the material body on a very fundamental and basic level. We are convinced that we are these bodies. We act on that basis all the time. I am male, I am female. Certainly we're very close to these bodies, and all kinds of sensations are flooding up to us, and our behavior is being influenced by them, and we're thinking, I'm male, I'm female. We look in the mirror and I think, you know, there's my destiny, you know. I'm old or I'm young, I'm white or I'm black. Even the mental thing, I'm smart, I'm stupid. Whatever, we're thrown into this, somehow or other. We're here, I'm in this one and not in that one. How the hell that happened, I got no idea. I used to worry about it while I was a kid. Why am I me and I'm not this person or that person or that? How did I get here and not there? Why are these two the ones that call themselves my parents and not those two over there? How did I get this fate and not that fate? But I don't know, somehow I just woke up and here I am in the middle of this whole thing, and there are these two characters that say, we're your parents. And here's these other characters that says, I'm your brothers. How did that happen? It's weird. And we take possession of it. Then everybody says to you, you know, you're a boy, play with guns. You're a girl, play with dolls. Or whatever, they give us other toys now. They give the girls guns and the boys dolls. It doesn't matter. We identify with whatever role we've got, you know. We have to play our part. History assigns a place to us. I'm born, I'm inhabiting a certain body, and now, you know, 5 5 million people are my enemies because my body happens to be black or my body happens to be white. I've inherited all the sins of thousands of generations of the past. Anyway, that's what happens to us. And we act on these bodies. We get into them. We play with them. We can have fun with them. But the trouble is we suffer, because then everything that happens to the body, I think this is happening to me. Now, the body is not so nice. You know, you peel off one layer of skin, and you really don't want to have anything to do with it. We don't think too much about it, you know, but every so often, you know, somebody gets eviscerated or something and we want to throw up. Well, that's us. It's a yucky, you know, it's not... There's a lot of biology that's going on here, and it's not pleasant. I mean, what is this body, right? It's a tube within a tube. And one end of the tube has teeth and the other end of the tube is an anus. And it's half filled with stool all the time. If you start thinking about what you're inhabiting, you're going to freak. And what do we have to do to make it pleasant? Wow, we got to watch out. You know, we got the mouth all the time. You got to pour chemicals in there to make it smell good. We got this and the deodorants. And shave the hairs off at different places. Or put the hairs on sometimes if they're falling off. Got to keep washing it, perfume it, and everything like that. Doesn't take too much for it to become really revolting. You know, the worst thing about when an airplane gets hijacked and these guys have to sit in a hot airplane for 48 hours is the smell. How everybody, you know, there's not much ventilation, everybody smells, and the toilets start to smell, of course. But where does all that stuff come from? It's us. It's our byproducts, you know. So how do we make ourselves look good, you know? Well, we really work hard at it. We spend a fortune. And it's mostly tricks of the trade, you know, it's illusions. That we do these things. Anyway, if you think about what it's like to be in a material body, it ain't nice. And most of the time, we don't think about it. We don't really think about the whole picture. And the fate of the body is old age, which begins, you know, when you're 16. You know, after 16, it's downhill, believe me. So it's mostly, you know, a little bit good, and then after that things are 18, you know, something like somewhere around there. You peak early physically, and then you start to grow old, and it's really a disaster. I'll be 50 years old this month, you know, and I keep thinking, how did this happen to me? You know, just a little while ago I was 18, and you know, I look, every time I look in the mirror, it's a shock. Who's that guy, you know, with little wrinkles in his face? Where'd they come from? And I thought when I was 18, it's not going to happen to me. This, you know, happens to other people, or it's so far off I don't have to worry about it. And then you just turn a corner and there it is, it seemed like yesterday, and so on. So it happens to everybody. Growing old is really a drag. And I tell you, I'm not in the really worst part of it yet, you know. There's a lot of people say, hey, you're only 50, you're young. As you get old and the body starts to fall apart, it gets attacked by various kinds of diseases. The diseases get worse and worse and worse. Medical science really, what it does is it shifts around the diseases. You know, so it's really great now. We don't have to die anymore of typhus and tetanus and smallpox. You know, now we have to die of camphor and emphysema and heart disease and AIDS. And, you know, but the death rate still goes on fairly regularly with the same inevitability. The disease is going to be there, and death is going to be there. These are things that actually, they're not happening to me. When I say somehow or other this can't be happening to me, it's a fact. The soul is forever young. Even though the soul is the oldest person, is also always young. That's why we always feel ourselves young inside. Because we are actually forever youthful. And when we look at what happens to the body and they say, this can't be true, it's a fact. It's not. But we've identified with the body and therefore we take up the horrors. And people, they fight old age. You know, what a losing battle that is. You know, to work so hard with the hair transplants, with the liposuction, with the cosmetic surgery, with the cosmetics of any kind, all the things that people do to try to look young, you know. It's horrible. What a losing battle. Death is going to get us all. See, what we've done to try to be happy in the material world is actually we've declared war on material nature. We have to say the things that you do, we have to say to material nature, the things that you do, I'm going to stop from happening to me. And we all lose. That's the bad news. But the reason we lose is that we've identified ourselves with the material body and we're trying to perpetuate our happiness on the basis of this body. I'm telling you the truth, and yet nobody realizes this. They're going on with this, and that's why everybody is suffering. On the basis of this, you know, we try for various kinds of little brief, little momentary flashes of pleasure. And that spirit of enjoying in the material world, this causes this identification of ourselves with the material body. Because we notice it's very deep, it's very tenacious. But it's caused, this illusion is caused by this act of sense gratification, the acts of sense gratification. Of trying to bring our senses into contact with the sense objects and then embracing them and enjoying them and thinking, I am the enjoyer, this is mine, now I am happy, I've got it together, whatever. That's what causes our suffering. The price we pay for this is death. Because that death, when it happens, when the body goes, when what we think is me gets taken apart in the most horrible way. And look what happens at the end. There we are, finally. We're thrown back on our own resources. We're now leaving this world. Everything that we thought we possessed, that I thought was mine, has now slipped through my fingers. Everything that I worked so hard for now seems not worth it. I am now facing death, and I've got no resources. I'm on my own. I assembled around me many beautiful, rich, and famous people who call me their friends, and they can't help me. They cry at my funeral, but they can't help me. I've amassed a huge fortune. I'm one of the richest men in the United States. It can't help me. Everything I've worked for, and now I have no resources. This thing is happening to me. My very body, which was the source of pleasure, is now a source of agony and is being pulled out from under me. And I don't know what's happening next. I'm being annihilated. What do I do? This is what people face. And it looks to them that they somehow or other, their whole life is now worthless. And in fact, it is. They haven't done anything to prepare for the time of death. They live their lives as though it was not going to happen. When it comes, and it's going to come to all of us, We're thinking, oh yeah, well, in my old age, but old age means just before you die. Is anyone here is confident that they're not old? When it comes to us, we'll realize this is the incredibly important thing that's happening to me, and I got no idea how to deal with it. Because we've lived our lives as though it were not going to happen. Every single one of us has to leave this world, has to give up everything that we've become attached to, and completely alone have to face this vast, dark thing called death. And we just have no resources. We've pretended it wasn't going to happen. Why is that? Therefore, our whole lives are unreal because they haven't taken this most momentous fact into account. So death is a horrible experience for those people who have been engaged in sense gratification. It wipes them out. Or at least that's their experience. Everything that we've become attached to, everything that we live for, it's all taken away. But for one who is engaged in self-realization, that person knows how to die. In fact, the process of death for that person is not a threat to his happiness. Want to be happy. It's a fact that we need to enjoy. The meaning of life is to enjoy. Those of us who are into spiritual life, it is not that we are looking for misery. But what we see is what the whole world says is happiness is actually the cause of everybody's suffering. This is called illusion. It's called Maya. So in order to taste real happiness, we have to detach ourselves from the so-called happiness in the material world. Right now, it blocks off our ability to relish and rejoice in the self. But by understanding who we are, that we are not the body, that we are spirit soul, the spirit soul is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss, that's what we are. Then we can begin, if we just understand that, then we can begin to act in a certain way that will dissolve our illusory consciousness. The real self is here, but now it's covered by gunk. It's just like having something very, very valuable, like a piece of gold, but if it's covered by dirt, you don't see that it's gold.